All right, we're in PCP world again, right? You guys are the parallel computing platform team. Last time we talked to you was Dev 10 time frame.
Yes.
Please introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is Sasha Dedilmov, and we talked last time about the concurrency visualizer, which was shipped as part of Visual Studio 2010. Mm-hmm. So a year and a half passed, so we did some work, and now we want to show you some new stuff which comes with the next Visual Studio.
Excellent.
Maybe we should start from just reminding what was in Visual Studio 2010. And luckily we have James Rupp, who is our PM and who is a great specialist in presenting it in a very condensed form.
We'll see.
Cool.
Yeah, so for those of you who have used the Concurrency Visualizer in Visual Studio 2010 and maybe forgotten a little bit about it, this will be a chance to get a refreshing course on the different features available. And for those of you who haven't seen this tool before, this will be a chance to see where we were in Visual Studio 2010. And then we'll let Matt and Alexei talk about some of the new features we're doing for this Visual Studio release.
So, Matt, Dev.
Hello.
Excellent, Matt. And Alexei, Dev.
Yes. Hello.
Right on, man. You guys will be talking soon.
Yeah.
Cool. Of course, you, principal architect, Dev.
Dev lead.
You're a dev lead.
And I'm the program manager.
Yes. So you kind of figure out the features and communicate with customers and stuff like that.
That's right.
Rock and roll, man. So refresh our memories, please.
Sure. So I guess we can point the camera to the screen on the wall, and I'll show off the features we had in Visual Studio 2010.
Great.
All right. So essentially, when you think about the concurrency visualizer, think about a tool that helps you visualize the behavior of your multi-threaded application at a system higher level, rather than doing a deep performance tuning on a specific architecture. And there's three main views in this tool. The first one we're looking at here is the CPU utilization view. So this is just showing you the degree to which your application made use of the overall CPU resources on the box throughout its execution. So the green here represents the utilization by the process that I profiled, which in this case was called prime numbers. Yellow represents the activity of other processes. And then we also have system processes, as well as showing idle time on the CPU here in gray. And so the y-axis here is just showing you the overall proportion of CPU resources being used. Don't think of it as specific core affinity, so this doesn't say anything about which core my application was running on. And so based on this chart in this application, we're seeing that the application made use of between 2 and 3 cores during this region of time.
Okay.
And after that point, it made use of between 3 and 4 cores. It looks like there was some interference from other processes on the box, as we can see by this yellow color here. And then after some point, the utilization dropped off down to 1 core until the application finished. So this view here just gives you a high level of how your application made use of the overall resources. So now on the threads view, this probably has the most information available in the tool. And what we can see here are several swim lanes, which represent the threads executing in the application. And the various colors represent the state that the thread was in. So red means that it was synchronizing, green means that it was executing, and the rest of the colors are listed down here in the visible timeline profile.
Hmm.
In addition to the thread swim lanes, we also have these I/O channels up here, and they show basically when the application was accessing the disk or various files on the disk. So basically, here we can get more detailed information. So if I want, I can for example zoom in. I can click on the various segments, and for example, this green execution segment. When I click on it, I can get the call stack for what my application was doing during that time. And I can also get call stacks for blocking categories, such as synchronization down here.
Hmm.
In addition to viewing the different thread activities and things like that, if I want to get an overall aggregate report of what's going on in the current time range, I can click on a category in the active legend. So if I click on execution, I can now view a report which coalesces all the execution call stacks in the time range that we're viewing.
Nice.
And it's important to note that it's for the time range we're viewing, because, for example, if I zoom in or if I scroll left or right, this report will actually update depending on what I'm looking at. So it really helps me narrow my investigation. In addition to that, I can hide various threads, and this will also update the report. So suppose that this debugger helper thread and some of the other threads were uninteresting.
Mm-hmm.
I would just hide them. The numbers here would be updated, as well as in the visible timeline profile.
Cool.
So this report here is something you might see in a classic profiler. But unlike the classic profiler, we also show this kind of report for blocking call stacks. So for synchronization, it can see the time spent in various synchronization calls in the current time range as well.
Cool, man.
So at a high level, that's what we show in the threads view. So now I'll move over to the cores view. And while I mentioned that in the utilization view, you can't really tell which cores your application was executing on, the cores view is all about showing you that. So this basically illustrates the mapping from threads to cores over the lifetime of your application. And this isn't particularly helpful unless you're managing your own thread affinity. So in that case, you want to avoid excessive cross-core context switches. Those can be pretty costly from a performance perspective. So for example, in this view, if I want to identify cross-core context switches, I would look for a particular thread jumping across these cores here in this one lane. So on this four-core box, I now have four swim lanes, and the threads are now color-coded. So this particular thread, 9740, is this light blue color. And if this were jumping around between the various swim lanes, that's how I could visually identify the cross-core context switches.
Okay.
This report below also helps call it out more clearly because it has a column which shows you the percentage of context switches that cross cores in this time range. And I can see that actually this application is pretty well behaved, maybe because I was using the task parallel library built on top of the .NET thread pool. So
it looks like you were doing a prime number calculator. Were you using a sieve?
No, I was just doing a really naive calculation.
Okay.
Just for demo purposes.
I was playing around with one earlier using the sieve of Rathiaceans.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one. Not as fast as the sieve of Atkins.
Yeah.
Anyway, just saying, it's cool. It's right on.
Interesting stuff, yeah. So this is, at a high level, what we did in Visual Studio 2010. And so I guess now we can turn it over and discuss the improvements we made.
So before we do that, let's talk about, like, since we have Channel 9, we're communicating, how did customers take to this in the VS 2010 frame? Did you get a lot of interesting data from their usage and feedback?
Well, we did speak with as many customers as we could get to, and we got very interesting feedback. And some of this feedback was good, some of this was not as good. For instance, we found that some people could not find the idea that they can click on this red thing and then see the blocking profile. So the discoverability of this feature happened to be not ideal. From other point of view, we never heard anybody saying that it didn't help them. So basically, if you're going for the either you're going for just understanding what's going on the history of your run, or you are investigating for specific patterns of the who waits, when, whom, which is part of any serious performance, of most performance investigation in parallel world, then I think that most people were pretty happy about it, as much as we know.
Excellent.
One thing that actually, I would say, limited the amount of feedback we could get is the fact that this concurrency visualizer shipped in Visual Studio 2010 Premium and Ultimate, which, you know, they're a little bit more expensive, and less people could use them. So there was a smaller set of customers that use it relative to the people who were using Visual Studio Professional.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, in this release, we're very pleased that we are actually shipping it in Visual Studio Professional and up. So we hope that more people will have a chance to use it, and we'll hear more feedback from that.
Cool. And so let's talk a little bit about what you've done.
All right. Maybe just before he goes,
yes,
one more detail. So, of course, we got some business goals when we started doing the stuff. And one of the inputs and kind of goals which we got is to make it more scalable so that it will be usable for the distributed scenarios when you have many machines around. So because in this case, like, traces are big, like, traces could be easily, like, accumulated, like, gigabyte in a few minutes on one machine, but imagine 100 machines which are running together. So, an interesting point, interesting situation is that we basically had to rewrite the code to make it scalable. Okay. So we had code which worked, as you saw, pretty nice, but it was not scaling well with the really big numbers of the threads or times and so on. Mm-hmm. So we had basically to rewrite it, and it's a lot of code. It's about 200,000 lines.
Wow!
Like this. Happened to have a good team.
Yes.
So we rewrote it.
Okay.
And the result is that now we can deal with the big traces. Like I personally, probably biggest which I tried was about 66 gigabyte.
Mm-hmm.
It takes some time to process, but after this, responsiveness of the UI is the same as small trace. Basically, don't feel much difference.
Cool.
There are some operations which take time, like recalculating this report of the time, but at least graphics and movements are just not blocked.
Excellent.
So we have this now ready for expanding to big traces, to cluster, to distributed system. It hopefully will be the next thing to do. Mm-hmm. But right now, what we'll be releasing in the next Visual Studio is still for the single box.
Okay.
So for the single box, so we did basically three big things which we want to show you now. So one thing is just better integration with Visual Studio. So our previous integration with Visual Studio was probably okay, but we wanted something better. So Matt will show you how we integrate now. Our goal here is to make it so easy and so convenient that basically people will do it always because it doesn't cost them anything and give something. And we hope that, well, if we're successful, maybe it will change a little bit how people do work, because instead of running the changes in darkness, they will be basically observing how it goes. This is number one. Number two, we introduced custom markers, which introduce semantics to this story. We not only show you the kind of internal stuff from inside of the machine, but also something which you understand, which you in the program define, and you can produce in a more meaningful way. And third thing we did was concerning GPUs. So we have some initial support for GPUs.
Great.
So let's go then to the first of them, which is integration.
Cool.
So I'll switch up here, and I'll just...
Cool.
Hello.
Hello.
So I'm going to give you guys an overview of the new Visual Studio integration work that we've done. And like Sasha said, we wanted to make it as easy as possible to get right into our tool so that it can be part of your development cycle, just like debugging is. So... Let's just show you. We put all of our new functionality right up front in this new release. So now we have this concurrency visualizer menu in the Analyze menu with easy access to our settings and the ability to launch and attach to a process or open an existing trace. So previously, for people who have used our tool in Dev 10, it was quite a bit more difficult. You had to go through the performance wizard or create a performance session. But with this right up front, it's a lot easier to get started. And there's an even more exciting way to get right into your to get started with profiling, which I'll show you right now. So let's say I have a really simple program here that I'm working on, and this is all in my code. So this is just going to download a number of websites to a file on my local disk. So I have some sites here in an array, or some URLs, and I'm just going to iterate over them and download them using the web client class.
Just out of curiosity, I see the channel 9 link at the top, but what's that second one?
So that second link is the URL for our team's blog.
Nice.
And you are highly encouraged to visit that and learn about a lot of exciting features. So let me just quickly go back to this concurrency visualizer menu. Now you'll notice there are a few more items here. So there's also this start with current project, which will start profiling using the concurrency visualizer with the selected project, which is what I have up on the screen. And there's also this keyboard shortcut, which I'll get to in a moment. And that makes it really, really easy. We also have this add SDK to project, which I won't get into too much right now, but this is how you can add our markers SDK to your project very easily. And the markers are what Sasha discussed briefly a moment ago, and he'll show that to you more in a little while. So let's look at the code. I wrote this in I don't know, 10, 15 minutes or so. And you know, the first thing most developers do is they probably, you know, they debug it and they'll see what happens. So that's good. But the concurrency visualizer really allows you to see what's happening inside, you know, it's a microscope, basically. So it allows you to really see what's happening on the hardware. So now with this start with current project, I can very easily go right into profiling with Alt-Shift-F5, and all of a sudden, so here's my program, and here's the concurrency visualizer. So the program ended, and collections finished. That took a total of about 10 seconds or so. For people who have used our tool in Dev 10, that process takes several minutes. So I would not have been able to do that in a demo. It would have been a painful experience to watch, unless I had something really interesting to say. But anyway, very quickly, I just went right from my code to a concurrency visualizer report. And I can see very quickly, okay, well, my main thread is spending all of its time doing I/O. And, I mean, it's pretty obvious why, because I'm just iterating through an array of strings and, you know, downloading some websites. But let's, you know, this is a really interesting and quick way to get started with any kind of tuning that I now want to do. So I'm not going to actually go into the details here, but let's go back to the program, and I'll just very quickly modify it. Let's say I don't want to be blocking the whole time on the main thread, so I'll just very quickly, you know, use the TPL to, I'm sorry, the task parallel library, for those of you who don't know, to do this asynchronously, and I'll just do that really quickly. So I'll just create a list of tasks, and this will, all right, and for each site, what I'm just going to do, there, by the way, I could do this a lot of different ways, and I'm just going to pick a simple one right now, but I mean, given how fast it is to profile, I could try a number of different things, including the new async functionality, and, you know, very quickly compare that as well, but I'm not going to do that at the moment. All right, so for each site, I'm just going to start a new task, and I'm going to download the site, and then for some people might realize that there's besides that syntax, there's a problem here, and I need to actually capture the site variable. So, okay, and now we're basically done. And so now I'm just gonna wait on these tasks, and we'll, all right, so that was pretty fast. Let's just debug that. Okay, well, that didn't tell us too much, but it seemed to be a little bit faster. And now let's actually get some real data. Let's Alt-Shift-F5, go right into the concurrency visualizer. All right, and this is our new collection, our new analysis screen. You'll see that's going quite fast. Okay, and we're back in the concurrency visualizer. So now we can see that our main thread is not blocked on I/O. Well, now it's blocked on something else. Now it's blocked on on waiting. But let's just also quickly compare these two. So what I'm going to do, if I can right-click, let's just create it. Look at these side by side. Obviously, the resolution here is pretty bad, but just to give you an idea, we could compare these pretty easily. Whoops, sorry about that. It's hard to use the laptop. All right, I'm failing with the laptop, but that's okay. So anyway, within just a few minutes, I was able to, you know, iterate on my program and quickly see how I could affect the performance of my application using the concurrency visualizer. There are quite a few other nice new features related to the Visual Studio integration that we've done that I'm not going to get a chance to talk about, but another point I just wanted to add about customer feedback. One of the things we were hearing was it was really annoying how it was necessary to always restart Visual Studio Elevated in order to use the concurrency visualizer. So that's another kind of just you know, area where we were able to listen to customers, and now that's not necessary anymore. If you're doing a collection, you will need to click yes or sorry okay at a UAC prompt, but you won't need to restart Visual Studio and get back into your project and everything.
Great.
So this is just a brief overview of what we've done in Visual Studio, and I think Sasha will talk a little bit more about markers.
Okay, so next thing is great. So for this thing, you can get pretty easily some glance into what happens to the machine, but it's all in terms of machine categories like threads or cores or something. But when you're writing the program, you're thinking in different terms. In terms of some phases or some operations or something like this. So how you do this? So the life is, it's basically... people are doing it all the time from the beginning of the computers. Like, if they want to understand what's going, they do printf, basically. They printf, and then they read the long logs. And if it's sequential, it's okay. You sequentially see what's going on, and not much better stuff you can get. Of course, good debugger helps you avoid it, because you can see it immediately. But in parallel world, it's all different, because when things are happening concurrently, you need to coordinate things. You need to, while reading what happens on this thread, understand what at this time happened on this thread and how they connect to one another. So it's just hard. So I'm sure that most of the people who did investigations in the concurrent parallel system had a lot of nights spent basically trying to interpret these long traces of meters or kilometers or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So we tried to improve it a little bit. So basically, Visual Studio, what's first word? Visual. So why we can do visual tracing, visual printf, visual assert, this kind of things.
Excellent.
And this is more or less what we added here as a new feature, which is called markers. So basically, you do have an easy way to add things which are exactly parallel to old good printf or assert. And then you will see them graphically on the picture.
Okay.
So we can show it also very easily on the screen.
Let's do it.
So, yeah, markers are basically an API that allows you to decorate your code in a way that when you view it through the concurrency visualizer, you look at the results in a more semantically meaningful way because you yourself actually instrumented the code. And for those of you who are familiar with the scenario markers API that was released, I believe it was on Code Gallery, in the Visual Studio 2010 timeframe, you may have seen this already. So what the feature we're about to show you is an improvement upon that, where we're shipping an improved API that comes along with Visual Studio, with the concurrency visualizer, and then an improved set of visualizations.
Cool.
So as you see, I created a new project, which is empty, which is doing nothing. And then I added SDK to the project, because this is where I want to... this is basically why I want to show you. I want to show you how I use markers. So I did markers here, and well, I don't have anything ready, so let's just assume that I simulate some code, like
so when we added the SDK, when we clicked that button in the UI, it basically added a reference to the DLL for markers that ships with the concurrency visualizer.
Okay.
And so now we need to add a using statement for the namespace.
This is my problem.
Nice.
It's kind of not very interesting, but imagine that there is something interesting around.
Okay.
So if I run it, of course I don't see anything, it just finishes immediately. If I see it under concurrency visualizer, you can imagine that I see just these four sleeps. But imagine that there is something interesting which I want to know about it. So if I basically want to printf some information or to put some asserts in a graphical way, I am just adding this using which was mentioned by James a minute ago, and this would be Microsoft Concurrency Visualizer Instrumentation. This is the namespace where markers live, and after this I can basically start using them. There are some more elaborate ways of doing it, but the simplest is just markers and then write, for instance, flag. So flag will show up on the screen, and you can write here basically whatever you want in the format of printf. I don't know. It would be some real data here instead of this. And then imagine that, for instance, this is interesting phase of program, which you want to understand how this phase goes on. So what you do, you just do using markers enter span, and again you have your printf. And then imagine that at this point I have some interesting data which I want to report, again, like printf style. So what I can do, I can write flag, or there is another primitive which I just want to show you how it looks like, which is called write message. And here you can put whatever you want again, printf style. So let's just run it. Alt Shift F5. So the hope is that you will see exactly what you wanted to printf in your trace, but in more eatable form, which is here. Here is my span. So you know that when you enter this span, this was here, and you know on which thread it was. And by the way, so the convenient way to look, you just group marked by thread, then they will be associated with threads. And there is your flag, and this is your message. When you click on any of them, you get all your details back. Mm. When you click on this, you get all your details back. And you can also see the old good trace just below in the form of table. And again, it is only thing which is in the visible time frame. And again, if you decide to hide some thread, you will not see it. Cool. So it's only so it's way of navigating, filtering, things like this. So we assume that you will be using a write flag or write alert, which is basically a red flag for your asserts, and then they will pop up on the top. And you can use spans for your phases and messages for details, like you have small details.
Great.
So the messages are not so visually offensive. We just hint that there are something around. You can go there and see them. For instance, if you want, imagine that there is a long trace, a lot of stuff. You go there and you see it below. So if you go to MSDN explanation when it's all released, you will find some more ways of using it with more useful reasons.
Yeah, this is one of the more basic ways to use the API, but there's more sophisticated things you can do that expose more control. For example, you can assign different importance levels to markers. You can assign different categories, which show up as different colors in the visualizer here. So if you need to do more, we expose a way to do that.
Okay.
Blue screen.
Cool. It's actually not a blue screen.
Yeah. So just a hint about this new additional thing which James explained. So first of all, it is level. So it's similar to ETW level. You might say how much stuff you want to see in terms of important stuff. You want to see only important stuff, only less important stuff, and so on.
And just like you saw in Visual Studio 2010, you'll notice that if you make use of the task parallel library, the parallel patterns library, mm-hmm. Or C++ AMP, mm-hmm. You'll see markers that are already part of the trace generated on your behalf that will help mm-hmm. you understand your program if you're using one of those programming models. Mm-hmm. And we actually got feedback in Visual Studio 2010 that some customers weren't happy that they were always seeing this information. They wanted to opt into it or opt out of it. So we made it possible to turn those on and off when you collect the trace.
Great. And of course, as you mentioned, I mean, it's Visual Studio is a collection of programming models and styles. This equally works for Visual C++. And you could use these markers in SDK inside of a C++ code.
Yep, it works in native and managed code.
Now, you wrote the SDK in what? Managed?
Both.
In both. Beautiful. Beautiful. That's important because it always seems that when we come out with these cool new features, one or some other language is behind. Those days are over. So everyone's going to get this goodness.
Yeah, actually, it's triple because we have even different variations. One is optimal for plain C, another for C++.
Nice.
So it's very simple. So we just get it and you use whatever you want.
It's one header.
It's one header.
Excellent.
So for C, just one header.
Good.
And I'm glad that James mentioned it, that I really forgot to show it, but we can do it later if we want. So, yes, all these Perl frameworks, runtimes, come with their own events, which already show what when is Perl for, where are your tasks, where are your basically guts, which are hidden from you because you want to hide from you, but you want to see them, here they are.
Okay.
So it's basically, in most cases, you don't want to see them, but on the optimization stage, you do.
Sure.
And they will appear automatically.
Excellent.
You don't need to do any instrumentation with your code. You need just to ask for it.
Perfect. And it works, of course, with C# 5's 5.0, whatever it's going to be called. Since we're at build now, we can say whatever we want.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, their async await model, which uses tasks under the covers, but it's a language feature, and sort of has the big state machine. It's not parallelization. Right? Do you understand? So this would work for your async await stuff in C#. Do you want to do one of these markers on when you're doing an async operation in the async model? You're going to be able to show me what's going on in the ugly state machine?
Not exactly, because markers are fired synchronously, right? So.
Well, so we... we're still instrumenting some of the some of these newer APIs. The amount of support for the async library isn't yet determined, but for the TPL and whatnot, it's fully supported already.
Right on.
But so in the user's code, you may not be able to use them effectively anyway for asynchronous types of activities. But
I think that what Charles asked is not about our markers, but about the internal markers.
The markers generated by the...
So, and I think that Matt's answer is exact. Like, we're trying to do our best. How much
great.
We will be successful to do before release, we'll see.
Excellent. No, this is great stuff.
So the types of useful information you'd see from an async perspective would be anything generated by that, that set of extensions, by the async code itself on the internals, but... not so much from the user code, since it does happen at an unknown time after you initiate it.
Absolutely, which is the whole kind of the cool thing of the model, right? All right. So we had Alexei, is right?
Yes, that's correct.
Right on. And you're going to show us what?
So I'm going to show you one of the new features in the Dev 11 release, which is the support of GPU.
Cool.
Performance data visualization. So the whole idea and the whole idea behind this is to give developers ability to view what's going on the GPU side, and that with rapidly growing variety of general purpose GPU computation, and especially with C++M.
Yes.
It's very important to give developers the tools which are integrated into Visual Studio, because the many hardware vendors, they have their own tools, and one of our main goals was to provide a single tool which is integrated into Visual Studio and which gives you enough information to be able to view and analyze and maybe improve performance of your C++M application, for example, or any DirectX DirectX application.
So now that brings up an interesting point. And that is, here we are at Build talking about HTML5. And DAI 9, we went out with the hardware accelerated HTML5 and CSS calculation. So when I'm targeting the GPU, even in that world, would I be able to use this tool if I'm a HTML5 developer?
Yes, you definitely will.
Rock and roll, man. That's pretty democratic. Great.
So. As you can see, there is an additional, on the utilization, there is an additional graph just below the CPU utilization graph, and it's the GPU utilization graph. The example I'm using here is pretty simple, but I'm sure that the developers will come up with much more interesting examples. So this is the matrix multiplication in its two variants. One is the very naive, very simple matrix multiplication, and the other is the grouped or tiled matrix multiplication, which utilizes the knowledge about the GPU hardware architecture, how the GPU works, what kind of optimizations you can perform, and so on. And this application was written using C++M.
Nice.
So as you see, the most of the time this application was utilizing the CPU, and it's related to initialization, filling out the matrices with the initial values, and so on. There are a bunch of activity going on here, but it's mostly for the warm-up on the GPU, so we can run then the main iteration. And then the most interesting things are going on just at the end. You see that there are two spikes right here. And let's just zoom in. And I didn't mention it, but now it's probably time to talk about it. The engines, that's the GPU engines, and depending on the hardware configuration, the card may have, say, 3, 4, or maybe 8 engines, and this is the engines which perform different tasks, for example, 3D engine, the video engine, the paging engine, and so on. Mm-hmm. So this particular application utilizes one engine, and now if we switch to the, and we see that there are clearly two different spikes, and one of them corresponds to the naive matrix multiplication, and the other corresponds to group matrix multiplication. So we already see that the group matrix multiplication is much faster than naive. So now let's switch to the threads view and see what we have here. Let's also hide the threads we do not need to get the better picture. Selection. And as you see, there are additional lanes with regards to GPU. There will be two lanes for each logical adapter, and the one lane will represent the activity from the process being profiled, and the second lane will represent the activity from all other processes. Hmm. And as you see, while there was some work performed by the GPU, CPU has been waiting for the GPU to complete the processing. And these several segments represent various parts of the matrix multiplication algorithm. So for example, these two first segments, they represent the memory copy from the host memory to the GPU memory. And this big segment represents the actual work being done, the actual multiplication being done by the GPU. The same for the second part, it's the copying of the two matrices, and then multiplication and copying results back. Hmm. And if we zoom out again and compare these two segments, so clearly see that the difference is pretty big. So this can show us that, okay, we have achieved our goal in optimizing this algorithm, and we probably can optimize it further, but now we need to look at the other parts of the application.
Sure. And so one of the things, as Matt was talking about, in terms of, sorry, I pointed to the wrong map, but they didn't see that on the camera, so I shouldn't have said anything. But this is Channel 9, man, we're real. In some sense, C++ AMP, the GPUs have thousands of cores,
right? Yes.
And if I want to really take advantage of what C++ AMP has to offer, forget about C++ AMP for the moment, but just target GPU to do general purpose computation, I might want to use 2,000 cores to blast through this huge data set and just party and be done in 2 milliseconds. Am I going to be able to use this on all those cores? That's my question.
Right now, we do not provide such kind of information. Mm. But I agree that that's very, very useful information. For example, how much do you utilize the GPU? How well do you use the local data share, for example, in IMD Pro, in IMD GPUs? Mm. Or do you have the bank conflicts and other GPU-related activity?
And then what about like being able to visualize the cache pipelines and stuff like that? That could be useful, right?
So what this is showing you is just whether the GPU is busy or not at any particular point in time.
Got it.
It doesn't really give you any more detail than that. So this is it could actually be helpful, the fact that this is a simplified view for people who just want to target the GPU and be done with it. But if you really want to get deep into the architecture-specific tuning, this data isn't going to help you with that at this point.
At this point, I understood, but I mean, it's the beginning, right?
So there are kind of different levels. On the first level, you get what you get from the high-level abstractions. If you want to go down, of course, you do want to go down if you want to get last percent of possible optimizations. Mm-hmm. But in the interesting point it is that in the world of GPU, it's not last percent. It may be last thousand times improvement, right?
Sure.
Because it's so potent.
Yes.
So, yes, we are working on this. Mm-hmm. Not now, but we are trying. The point it is that the only guy who knows what happens inside of GPU is hardware.
Got it.
So we need to get from hardware there details about what is inside of it. And they do have some kind of APIs for this.
Sure.
So the problem is that they are different from one to another, mm-hmm. and they're not always kind of friendly to use, like you need to repeat your kernel many times, or like you cannot connect two stuff, two counters at the same time, maybe, mm-hmm. or things like this. So just to work on this. Hopefully we'll come later.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, we want to do this for dev beep, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess to basically summarize that is that we're kind of going through the same growing pains as GPU programmers are going through, as they have to deal with hardware-specific solutions depending on whether they're working with NVIDIA or AMD. Mm-hmm. And if you really want to tie yourself to that specific platform, those solutions can provide you much more detailed data. Mm-hmm. But one of the things we're looking into is to be able to provide this kind of data for developers who want to write to any kind of hardware.
Yes.
And so we're struggling with the exact same thing, is how do we get this data for everybody? Mm-hmm. So it's one of the things we have to look into as we move forward and look into the next version.
No, but it's really cool to be able to at least visualize what your program's doing on a GPU as opposed to what's going on in each core and each part of the computation.
Yeah, this is a very high system-level view of what's going on between the CPU and GPU.
Which is actually probably sufficient for a lot of programmers that are out there. Like Sasha was saying, I mean, this is an abstraction. And for most programmers that are maybe not too familiar with the internals of the GPU and really how to tune a GPU, tune their program for the GPU, this is probably enough because they get to see where their program is blocking in relation to the work that's being done on the GPU. And in many cases, one of the main kind of optimization strategies is just to make sure that you're doing work on the CPU while you're doing your GPU work as well, so that you're not losing anything. In this case, that's on the screen. We have we're basically waiting on the GPU. It's synchronous there.
Ah.
So even this amount of information is quite helpful.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Could you have done this with being asynchronous on the GPU? I mean, or parallel?
Sure, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very interesting. How was the C++ AMP programming experience, Matt?
So, the C++ programming experience was great because it allows you to use the language that you know, that's the C++.
Uh-huh.
If you write the code which is restricted by Directive 3D, you need to follow some rules and there are some restrictions. But overall, the benefits you get by having using only single language are great.
Excellent.
Along with the debugging experience, with integrated debugging experience into Visual Studio, uh-huh. the IntelliSense support, that is great.
Excellent. Yeah.
Yeah, so it looks like, nobody knows how it will go in the future, but it looks like GPU go the same path as CPU and other hardware did. So in the beginning it is wildly different, no common patterns, no common terminology, everything is very ideas. You need to know small idiosyncratic details of this and this and this. Mm-hmm. And like, I know, I remember in the 80s people came with their network card and their drivers to when they went to business trip. Something like this. Now it's kind of all standard, right?
Yeah.
And probably GPU will go the same way. So it probably will some kind of mature, settle on some common models, and then it will be easy. But for now, until it happens, it probably will take some years before it comes, a few years. So it looks like tool like ours might be a helper in this transitory period. Like, we might be we think about where we can help as an educator. Like, we can show you on the high level, and then we can maybe try to guide you how to find these things on the specific level of the stuff coming from specific HTTP.
Mm-hmm.
So, but
for example, one of the important features which we do not show here yet is the memory utilization, both global and possibly local. So that might be very important, especially for the applications which are very memory intensive.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important to see how you utilize the GPU memory.
Mm.
So we might add this feature in the future releases.
Excellent.
As well as the hardware-specific performance counters, which are also available, but as Sasha said, they have their own restrictions.
Sure. They're tied to the platform.
To the platform, yes.
And probably force you into C.
And another problem, they are very cryptic. It's,
sure.
I don't know. I'm not special in GPU. I'm looking at them. I don't understand most of them.
Okay.
So people who spend some time on this understand more.
Yeah.
But the same is true for our customers. So we hope to basically help them cover this, basically. Whole.
Excellent. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, hey, so what's the call to action? I mean, people can get this in...
So... I guess if you're seeing this video...
They are seeing this one. They're not seeing it right now.
Okay. Well, if you're watching this, then you must have gotten the build release of Visual Studio. So the call to action is under the Analyze menu. Go to the Concurrency Visualizer flyout and try out the tool on your own code. See if it helps you tune your application or give you an overall picture of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I would say check out our blog, which we saw in that URL that that was in Matt's demo earlier. Now I'm getting the names wrong.
Visualize Parallel?
It's blogs.msdn.com/visualizeparallel.
Okay.
So, try it out for yourself and give us feedback because, you know, this is our first attempt at releasing any kind of GPU features, for example, and we're eager to get feedback to see what people really need to tune their application, and that'll kind of inform what we put out in the future and keep feedback coming on everything else as well because so far we've gotten some and we've been able to incorporate it, but the more the better.
Excellent. Well, hey, great job, you guys. This is getting really, really, really nice. And I look forward to seeing where this goes in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Right on.
Thanks.
Keep on keeping on.
Thank you.
See you guys.
See ya.